Good evening, fellow quack addicts. David Piper, Rusty Ryan, Sling and Quack.
A lot of quack. We got some off-season football quack, some pro duck quack, some basketball quack. We got a variety today.
Yes. We got to make it good. It's my finale.
I know, which is such a bummer. I tried to pull out all the stops, so like the liner of my jacket and trench coat is just filled with different types of quack.
All I ask is that when people listen to this, they pour one out for me.
One for me, and one for Dave.
Make it good though. I don't do that.
No. But if you were
I'm a good Oregon beer snob.
Yeah. So, what do we want to start with? Let's start with basketball.
Let's do, because basketball, big win this weekend.
Basketball was huge. The biggest.
First off, taking the tickets down to $15 and putting a trophy in there for people to look at, they packed that house.
It was such a noticeable difference, even watching from home, in terms of volume and just the number of people there. Like, it was huge. It's crazy when you don't overprice tickets, like, people buy them.
I was out and I had to listen to this one on the radio.
Uh-huh.
But the difference in the energy of the crowd and just the noise level of the crowd was palpable on the radio.
So noticeable.
I mean,
so on TV, very, it was noticeable.
And Oregon played really well.
Yeah.
Took down a top 10 team. They finally got like that marquee win.
Mm-hmm. First win over like a top 40 team.
Missing
to
me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, they are right there on the bubble.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're kind of in that last four in area on pretty much everybody's predictions. But again, when you look through what happened in the offseason, and you would tell me that, like this team is going to be like heading into the last couple weeks of the season with a legit chance to make the NCAA tournament.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy, with no depth and a bunch of freshmen. And they're really playing good basketball. Like, the defense is finally starting to come around. This team is really, really good and efficient offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to get Altman system on defense with the mixing defenses and mm-hmm. whatnot. Now, three games left on the road, but if you win two of those three and you can pick up a game or two in the Pac-12 tournament, I mean, you're right there on Selection Sunday with a chance to get in.
Yeah, I saw some people were saying that Oregon was on the bubble before the win against Utah, and I saw some projections have them being a 12 seed. So, I mean, it's so weird to me that this team is performing at such like a high level compared to where we started our expectations at the beginning of the year.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, if you just
sorry, we lost you there. Okay, until Dave comes back on. Like, it seems like with these players, one of the big strengths has been that they're so good at like maximizing their strengths and really minimizing their weaknesses. There doesn't seem to be really anybody that's playing outside of their skill set. Like, Joseph Young has been the playmaker to make plays. Abdul Bassett has played really well. Bell is like a young T-Rob. A lot of the players are really just playing to the best of their abilities.
Sure, I mean, you know, and then you look at a guy like Elgin Cook, and he's one of the more dynamic guys on the team who can make plays on his own. But then you have the other guys, the role players, the Rorys, the Bensons, and guys like that, and you know, they can all stick that three, which is huge. So you have your playmakers that can finish, but when they kick out to wide open guys, I mean, those are all guys that can put the ball in the hoop.
Yeah.
And that is something that's really big in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so than in the NBA.
Yeah. I think this team has also done like a really good job of either getting to the rim or shooting threes. And I know advanced stats like absolutely love that ideology. And
yeah, it's unlike the Houston Rocket ideology.
Right. And unlike Charles Barkley, I think analytics is like very important and very insightful. Like, that's kind of what bugs me about LaMarcus Aldridge, is that he takes, like, the most inefficient shots.
Yeah, so unless you're, like, LaMarcus Aldridge,
yeah,
you can hit him at the rate he does.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a super efficient shot for most guys.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, so, you know, this is what Oregon's got left. They've got the dreaded Bay Area road trip, which they are terrible on. They haven't swept that trip since the 70s.
When was the last time they beat Cal at Cal?
A long time ago. Well, so they had gone forever without beating Stanford at Stanford.
Uh-huh.
And then Altman broke that streak.
Uh-huh.
They'd gone since the 80s without doing that. Cal, I mean, I don't think Altman's beaten Cal at Cal.
Right. That's been the thing for a while. We just can't win at Cal.
Cal's not very good this year, though, so.
Man. Still scary. It's still Berkeley's still one of those Twilight Zone areas.
Yeah, and then we have to go into Corvallis after that and play the Tinkle defense.
I don't get that joke.
Which is really, really good.
Is Tinkle their head coach?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know if that was like a joke. It just sounded funny. That's why I laughed.
Somebody hasn't been paying attention.
Nope. I watch Oregon basketball, and I don't really watch that much other Pac-12 basketball.
So we'll see. I mean, it depends on how they do in these last few games, and then they go to the Pac-12 tournament, and you know, hopefully everything goes well.
What are the odds? What would you say the odds are for a win over Cal?
Oh, I like the odds. I mean, it's on the road, and the road's always tough, but we're a lot better than they are. I'm going to say 70%.
70%? Yeah. What's the chances that we beat a 17-9 Stanford?
Ooh, I think we're better than them, but they're also a lot better than Cal. On the road, I'm going to say 55%.
Okay. And what are the chances we beat Oregon State?
They're going to be super fired up. You know, they'll want to ruin our season. They're going to play really tough defense. They can't score. We're uh-huh. the highest scoring team in the league.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say 70%.
Ooh, aggressive. So basically, if I'm doing my math correctly, which I'm not because I'm doing this in my head, that's about a 23% chance that we win all three of those games.
Yeah, something like that.
Which isn't terrible.
So not a great chance, but there's a chance.
Yeah. So you're saying there's a chance. If Oregon wins two of those games, do you think they make the NCAA tournament?
If they win two of those three, I think they need to pick up at least a game in the Pac-12 tournament to have a shot, preferably two games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
they're third in the conference right now.
They are. And if they go 2-1, they'll almost assuredly finish at third in the conference.
Uh-huh.
So they have that going for them. The conference isn't necessarily great.
Mm-hmm.
Their problem is they don't they don't have like a non-conference win you can look at and say, hey, that's a really good non-conference win.
Right, they got a couple. Illinois. Like, right.
And Illinois is like a fellow bubble team.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, they've got the Utah win now. They split with UCLA, and UCLA is another bubble team.
Mm-hmm.
They
played close with Michigan, but that doesn't really count. It's not like close football.
Doesn't count. Michigan ain't all that good, so.
Well, they're 19.
Michigan's 14 and 13, so.
And they're number 19 in the country?
No, they're not. They were at the time Oregon
played. Oh, that's what I'm reading. Okay, never mind. Never mind.
So, I think that they've got... a better than 50-50 shot of making the tournament
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Oh, but don't forget their huge win over Concordia.
Concordia. Oh, I can name all kinds of huge wins on this resume.
Coppin State.
You're not talking Concordia. You're talking about Toledo and Coppin State. Portland. Don't forget that big Portland State win.
Yep.
Cal State Northridge. Delaware State. God, oh. Early season college basketball games are a joke.
Like, who are these schools?
Cal Irvine.
Yeah. I've heard of those.
USC. Oh, wait, sorry. Anyway. So, yeah, it's...
It's a big 2 weeks. I'm excited for the game. Actually, by the time this goes up, the Cal game will probably already have happened.
Perhaps. Maybe I'll get my shit together and put it up on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, unless you feel like really on the ball. So, man, I'm excited for that Cal game. And then Stanford, like Cal's late. It's at 8 o'clock, so that means I can catch it. And
what
Stanford.
Day is that on Wednesday night?
Yeah, it's on Wednesday night. Wednesday at 8, and then Stanford is Saturday at 4.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, you want to switch gears and talk about the Combine?
Sure. I know nothing about the Combine because I don't watch guys run around in their underwear.
Okay, what do you think football is?
But
that's what football is. It's like the tightest clothes ever.
Yeah, but they're like, I said I don't watch guys run around. I watch guys beat the hell out of each other, not run around though.
Okay, well,
I watch big boy SEC football.
Oh god, I was waiting for that. All right, so we'll just go through these player listings.
Look, before we get started on this, just after all these years, I have a confession to make.
You're not a Duck fan. What's the confession?
Noel fan here. Noel fan here.
The long con. Man, Jameis Winston.
Let me tell you why Jameis Winston is the number one pick.
You don't have enough of a drawl in that sentence.
First off. Okay.
And you sound way too sober.
He ain't been convicted of nothing.
Scoreboard, baby.
That the accuser was proven way more untrustworthy than Jameis was. Jameis was just an innocent victim.
I'm gonna get in trouble if we go any further.
Yeah.
All right, Jake Fisher, offensive lineman. He jumped up a lot of people's boards, possibly into the first round. One of my favorite shit talkers on the team. Bench pressed 225 25 times. His 40-yard dash was 5.01, which was the second fastest among linemen. And
that's
four,
really fast for a
guy. Yeah, he's like over 300 pounds, and he ran the 40 400ths of a second slower than Jameis Winston. Watching, there's like a simulcast of Jameis Winston running, over top of Marcus Mariota running, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Mariota whipped his ass. Looked a lot like the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. And then he had the second best vertical jump, the best three-cone drill, and the best 20-yard shuttle among offensive linemen. So, dude's fast. And he's like 305 pounds. So, I mean, how that translates necessarily to the league is going to be interesting because, like, he'll be going against defensive ends as big as he is. But I think he definitely has the athleticism and tools to pick everything up. So, Grossi was there, didn't really do anything. He just, like, got measured. Marcus Mariota didn't do the bench, obviously, because he's a quarterback, and that means absolutely nothing, even more so than it means for, like, any other position. 4.52 40, sixth fastest among all QBs at combines since 2003. 4.52 is really fast. Like, it's fast. And then it's really fast for a quarterback. He had the top three cone drill. He had the third best 20-yard shuttle, measured at 6'4", 222. Apparently, he wowed everyone at the combine. Like, the best things that he did, like, apparently he was stellar in his interviews. Was better than Russell Wilson, which is, like, crack to all these NFL guys who just are just butt-chugging the Russell Wilson Kool-Aid. And then he threw really well. Like, it's so unusual to see a top quarterback throw at the combine because it's not their receivers that they're used to. It's a different place. Nothing scripted. Like, they aren't prepared like you see on, like, a fall Saturday. And there's another opportunity to throw on the pro day, which for Oregon is March 12th. And so it was so unusual to see Mariota opt into it. And he threw so well, impressed so many people. So, once again, Mariota killed it, but I mean, who is surprised at all? Ifo Ekpre-Olomou that he's going to be back playing in September.
That's absolutely insane.
Which is crazy because he had surgery 8 weeks ago. Like, that turnaround, modern medicine is unbelievable.
It really is.
That's so, he's like, he missed the last two games. Like, he played the entire regular season and the Pac-12 championship game, tore his ACL, and is going to be back by playing next year.
Eric Armstead, how'd he do?
24 reps on bench, 5.1 on a 40, which I was kind of surprised by. That seemed really slow for him, given how athletic he is. Like, for him, he's just such a combination. He's like a lean 292 pounds, which is sounds a little ridiculous to say. But, I mean, he said he got a second round grade from the NFL before he decided to come out. I think he could have benefited more from 1 year going, but now he's slated as a first round draft pick, so what do I know? Because he has the talent to, like, totally take over games and blow people up. But what I don't think, and if there's, like, a question mark about him, it's how injury prone he is and how consistently he's able to perform at such an amazing level. Because there seemed to be times last season, and we're getting super nitpicky at this point just because it's, like, a different standard when we're talking NFL. But there were times in last year's games where he seemed to disappear that I don't think a team who's going to use their first-round pick would expect to get from their first-round pick. Like, when you have a first-round pick, like, that's got to be a value pick that works out for you. And it's really tough to pick one, to make a first-round pick, and not have it work out. Which is why the Redskins are so terrible, among other things. But, like, any team that sucks,
yeah,
you know that they haven't drafted first round well.
Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. Speaking of, they're apparently very interested in Mariota.
Oh God.
The Browns just hired a quarterback coach who's been working with Mariota.
If the Browns draft Mariota, I'm pouring one out on draft night.
Really?
His career would his career will be over.
Tell me more. Why do you think so?
It's Cleveland.
I can't think I honestly can't think of a worse city for him to land in. Like, except maybe
it's
Detroit.
The whole Joey Harrington. It's the whole Joey Harrington going to Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, what the Detroit organization was at that time, it's being put in a position to not succeed.
Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's almost better to be drafted at the end of the first round.
Oh, totally.
Because you end up on a better team.
Totally. You just, and look, I mean, you just need to end up in a place where there's a culture and there's a plan.
Which is why the Redskins suck, why the Cowboys suck.
Like, if I were an NFL general manager, and thank God I'm not, because you think the Browns are bad.
Well, there's always the Jags.
But I mean, it makes sense to me. Like, you see all these people like reach. Everybody reaches for the first round quarterback. Like, let's draft Bortles, like, you know, in the top five.
Oh, that was a Jags move, which means it's basically an idiot move.
To me, I mean, it just seems really intuitive. Like, let's get a, you know, let's take a franchise left tackle. Let's take a really, like, impact defensive lineman. Let's put players around and then go get a quarterback, as opposed to just trying to get a quarterback when you don't really have anything else, and then your quarterback is just in a position to fail.
Right, which is what the Buccaneers did and what the Texans have done. And what the Rams have been doing unintentionally. Well, I mean, been meaning to draft everybody but a quarterback, but they just seem to believe that Sam Bradford's the guy, which is not correct.
No, but I mean, look at it. I mean, Baltimore did it, and that's how they won. They won their first Super Bowl.
Yeah,
with that. Seattle did it. They had all the other pieces together before they drafted Wilson.
Yeah, and they even had, like,
San Francisco did it. Like, a lot of the good teams, Chip Kelly's done it in Philadelphia.
Yeah. I think what's important I think the 49ers is the best example of that, because their defense and everything and their special teams were so strong that it really exceeded anything the offense was capable of doing. The Seahawks are definitely a byproduct of having awesome skill players, but their real story is how good they are at selecting free agents and draft picks and then signing them to very cheap long-term contracts. But I definitely believe that the 49ers are, like, the best example of building all the pieces around and then adding a quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's the model. And so if you're a Mariota, you'd rather go to the Eagles.
Yeah.
Which would be awesome. That would even let's watch TV.
Yeah. Although I don't think, obviously, Chip Kelly would like to go up and get him, but based on what they would have, they would have to give up way too much than Chip Kelly would ever give up.
Yes, I agree. I think people like to talk about it because it's sexy, but
it's nice
when you
to
look
things
up, like, how much of your team you have to gut to do that. It's,
you're putting all your eggs in one basket, know, basically, because you're basically
with
selling.
Chip Kelly has the idea, like.
Yeah, Chip Kelly doesn't need. He can get 90% of the player, or like 80% of the player that Mariota is, at 20% of the price.
Moneyball.
Yeah. So, like, that's his thing, is he takes receivers that fit, like, a very specific mold that are undervalued. He takes, like, a player like Darren Sproles, who was a value pick. he just is very good at deciding which players like exceed their market value, and then they don't waste like any money on people who don't fit what they're looking for, which is why it was probably so easy for him to cut DeSean Jackson. Or not cut, but move on from DeSean Jackson.
Like, he's got Nick Foles. That's not bad.
Oh, he would love Nick Foles in college, too. He always talked highly of Nick Foles in college. So when he could get Nick Foles at, like, a steep discount, that was such an obvious move for him.
So I've got a combine question for you.
Okay.
I heard Hundley say he wanted to be the number one quarterback drafted.
Then he should have waited another year. Out? He should have waited another year if that's what he felt. I mean, I think that's, on a serious note, I think that's the byproduct of having a lot of yes men around. You know what I mean? Like, you have friends or whatever. Like, if you ever see the movie Broke, which is a 30 for 30 on how athletes, like, lose all their money 4 years after.
Very good.
Yeah. And basically, they have a section where it talks about how your friends that you grew up with are, like, turn into yes men. And their job is essentially to get money from you. Like, they're in your entourage, but you are their source of income. So it becomes their job to make you feel better to get more money. And I think in this scenario, he has a lot of people around him telling him how awesome he is. Because he has a lot of, like, natural abilities. And he's got, like, the raw tools. And you can see, like, the real superstar quarterback there. But that's sure. Still, like, a couple years out. And that's what people are banking on. That's what people are seeing. And all his friends are saying, yeah, you're the best quarterback. You should be taken first. And he's like, yeah, I should be taken first. That's going to be my goal. And, I mean, he's just not, like, he could easily, in 3 years, be, like, a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. He has all the tools to do it. He is just not there at this moment. So, and, like, that the project aspect of him and the unknown is what will keep him from being the top quarterback taken. Because if you have a top five pick, you cannot mess that up. Like, that's such a high-value pick.
And if you're convinced that quarterback is what you need to go over, Mariota and honestly Winston have both shown much more over their college careers than Hundley has.
They are much safer picks.
I still think that Winston is an absolute head case.
I think if you draft Winston, though, like, on paper, he's a much safer pick. I think if you draft Winston, you are accepting the risks. You are assuming the risks that he will not be in the league in 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, skill-wise, if you just look at, like, hey, like, I get the whole people saying, like, hey, he makes the NFL throw that Mariota hasn't been
passed. Oh, for sure.
That's 100% correct.
100%.
It's between the ears.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at it, if I have a $1 billion franchise, do I want to make the next 5 years, do I want to pin the next 5 years of my $1 billion franchise to Jameis Winston?
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel comfortable doing that?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't.
Right. There was a scout that was quoted anonymously saying, I don't know how you can even let him inside the building. Like, if you see how much trouble he was able to get into, allegedly, in Tallahassee with, like, the Tallahassee police basically babysitting the football team, imagine what he's going to do in a major city with all that money and fame. Like, he's going to start making more responsible decisions? No, that's not how it works. So, I mean, going to see him in person and see him live when he was at the Rose Bowl, it was really, like, the first time you had seen, okay, like, you knew he was a good quarterback based on, like, what everybody was saying. You can see him making throws, and he won a lot. But it wasn't until, like, he was throwing, like, 19-yard smash routes, like, on the run where it was like, oh, my God, this is, like, those are NFL throws. Like, those are throws that we haven't seen Marcus make. But going back to your point, it's like, do you want to take the player who's going to have like the most marketable position and use your first overall pick to take a guy that is so volatile. And like, even look back to the Johnny Manziel scenario. Like, he's now in rehab. A scout said that his greatest strength is that he always felt he could get out of something. But his greatest weakness is he always felt he could get out of something.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really think, like, the confidence in a way, like, near arrogance that Winston has and that, like, has allowed him to, like, recover from mistakes, make, like, incredibly difficult throws, deal very well with adversity on the field. Those same traits are what's kind of screwing him up off the field. So, agreed.
He doesn't have any fear of consequences.
Mm-hmm. And he looks really fat right now. Like, I remember I saw a picture of him on Twitter like a week ago, and I was like, whoa. How is that your physique when you're about to go to a literal meat market? All right, moving on. Tony Washington, linebacker. Ran a 5.02 40. Not fantastic, but he's probably like an outside linebacker and a 3.4. Like the run stopping side, not the quicker side. Or he's a down defensive end in a 4.3. He's probably a linebacker, to be honest. He's like 247. He did have a fast like 3-cone and 20-yard. But he had the slowest 60-yard shuttle time, which is not great. Troy Hill, though, really impressive. 4.55, 13th fastest CB. Seventh best 3-cone drill. One of the NFL scouts said that Troy Hill had a really solid combine. You know, I think he did a lot of good for himself, especially leading up to the pro day. So, like, the next big event for all of these NFL guys is the pro day. And it works a lot like the combine, where it's 40 agility drills. But the biggest advantage that it is to certain players is it's such a controlled environment. Like, everything is going to be so scripted, like, down to the second of where they're going to be, what they're going to be doing at certain times, and it allows them to, like, show the NFL their skills on their terms. So Mariota's going to be throwing to his receivers. Like, the players are going to be doing their drill. So this is, like, the best-case scenario for them to look as good as possible. So that's March 12th. That should be a big day. And also they can take, like, the things that they saw in the combine that they didn't do well and improve on it and show that they can make adjustments to the NFL coaches, because this is going to be, like, as close to, like, an NFL practice as they can get before the actual draft.
So I've got a question for you.
Okay.
Like, some of these drills, like the cone drill, like, what on earth is this supposed to measure? How does it supposedly translate to anything that actually happens?
Okay, yeah. So there's, like, the vertical jump, which tests basically explosiveness. It's basically a test of how explosive you are, because you're going from, like, a near standstill. The broad jump does, like, the same thing, but it tests, like, horizontal jumping rather than to, like, vertical jumping. The 40-yard dash tests basically how fast you accelerate. So, like, because you aren't necessarily able to get up to full speed by 40. You kind of can, but it's really how fast you get through, like, the first 10 to 15 yards. Like, the first 5 steps are pretty determining of the entire, how the entire run is going to go. So that's, like, way more important for, like, receivers, running backs, and defensive backs. Like, the bench press That isn't... Some people think it's a test of strength. It's actually a test of muscular endurance. Because once you hit up, like, 15 reps, that's endurance at that point, not strength. What else is there? So the three cone drill is... My question is if that's the pro shuttle or if that's, like, the L drill. Let me look this up real quick. Okay, so the three cone drill I'm going to assume is an L drill. So the three cone drill is set up to test agility and starting and stopping and making turns. So you'll run to one cone, switch back, run back to the original cone, run around in an L, loop around the third cone, go back to the second, and then back in to the first cone. So you end up where you started. That tests agility, foot speed, acceleration, deceleration. 20-yard shuttle is also known as the pro shuttle. That's lateral quickness side to side. 60-yard shuttle is kind of like a sprint endurance. So they all test like different traits you would expect to see. So for linebackers, pro shuttle is more important. Three cone drill is more important. DBs, vertical jump, 40, linemen. Like the first 10 seconds of their 40-yard is really important. Their bench press. But like for the bench press, you just need to hit like a certain number. Like if you hit 35 as a lineman and 45 as a lineman, people don't view that as something like that's a make or break. Like compared to someone who runs like a 4.3 40 and a 4.5 40. They just want to see that you hit like a certain level basically. And then one of the most important things is that it just shows how... the ability of someone to essentially get ready for something, like how well they're able to prepare, because the combine tests don't change at all year to year. So you know, like the players know exactly what each station is going to look like what each test is going to look like. So if someone comes in like very unprepared or does very poor in one of the events, it shows like that they can't prepare for something. So that's one of the biggest things that they want to see. It's just that you can prepare for something. So, because, I mean, there's a lot of players who didn't have good combines. There's a lot of really good players that didn't have good combines. There's a lot of really bad players who had amazing combines, also known as, like, workout warriors. Because, like, their numbers are just unbelievable. So, then they have, like, specific position drills and everything to just show off, like, your skill is very specific. But basically, they're looking for people who have red flags. They're seeing if people can prepare and if they have, like, the bare minimum necessary skills. Or if anybody just absolutely blows people out of the water. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. So. Anything else going on right now? I mean, we got some baseball going on. Ducks beat Portland tonight, move up to 8-1.
Yeah, baseball is just...
played anyone too.
Man, I thought I thought baseball would take so much longer to get good. Like, we started that baseball team, and I was just thinking, man, it's going to be a few years. Yeah, nope.
Good right away.
Nope. Right away.
Yeah. We're good at pretty much everything. If we could just get the women's basketball team in order, which I think will happen.
Oh my god.
We'd be good at everything.
Women's basketball.
I give Graves a pass on this year. It takes some time to move on from that clusterfuck of what they were trying to run under Westhead to actual real basketball.
That was a really nice way of putting it. Yeah, I just don't know.
What's funny is I tweeted that one time, and you can see who favorites your tweets.
Yeah,
those are my exact words. Like, yeah, I'll give Graves a pass this year. I think he'll get it done. It takes time to switch from the clusterfuck Westhead run to actual basketball, and Graves favorited that tweet.
Did he actually?
Yeah,
you're basically famous now. That's so funny.
I think it's just funny that like.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, I love
basically
seeing...
basically like a tacit agreement of my statement.
Yeah, just like nodding silently and favorites it. It's so funny, like, because like writing for Addicted to Quack, we don't necessarily, we obviously don't do this to become like these famous writers or anything.
No, we don't.
Or to make big money. I know that's why you do it, but
oh, yeah, the big bucks.
And it's just like, it's just still kind of has like that blogger label or whatever, fair or unfair. And it's always so weird when like our posts kind of interact with people on the actual like team or organization. Like I remember a few years ago, someone wrote an article and like photoshopped in Casey Matthews and Spencer Passenger into the scenes in Pulp Fiction. And they ended up having like a full dialogue about the article. Or there was like I wrote an article about Eric Armstead before this season, and like a bunch of his family members started retweeting it.
Yeah.
And it was so weird because I'm just like sitting here writing this or whatever and thinking like it might get 40 comments or whatever, and like some people who like actually are in the story that I wrote about read it.
There's been a lot of weird things over the years. It's been an interesting ride. When I started this, I had no expectation or thought of that like anybody would actually want to read anything I wrote, because who the hell am I? Like, I'm just,
obviously you're a big deal.
Obviously I'm a big deal. And for me it was the second football season I was covering, and I was coaching high school basketball at the time. And I go to shake the other coach's hand before the game, and he says, "Hey, aren't you the Addicted to Quack guy?" And that was for me like the moment of like, oh my god, like people actually read this. And you know, here we are all these years later, and you know, we're pulling in 3 million visits a year, and there's definitely no doubt that people actually read this still sometimes, to my surprise.
Yeah, it's I remember, like, after I did my first article for Addicted to Quack, I got text messages from people that were like, oh, you're big time now. Apparently, it's, like, a big thing. Although some people move on to, like, EDEC or 24/7 or whatever. But Addicted to Quack is taken somewhat seriously for some reason. We should not be taken seriously at all.
No. No, you should not. But I think that's been kind of the secret, or not so secret, to our success over the years, is that we don't take it. I mean, obviously we work very hard at it, and we're very thoughtful, I think, in our dialogue, in our discourse, very, very thoughtful in that we're not sinking to the lowest common denominator of the internet that I feel so many, especially sports blogs.
Oh my God. It's so terrible.
But I think the bottom line is, and what truly has been the secret to our success and our community and everything, is that it's sports. It's supposed to be fun. We don't take ourselves too seriously, because these are games. You know, it's. We love this team. We spend obviously way too much time on it, but in the end, it's a game. And you wake up the next morning, and your life is exactly the same as it was the day before. And no matter how it's going, if you're not having fun with it, then why are you even a sports fan to begin with? Like, what's the point? And I think that just not losing sight of that, and expecting that not just from ourselves, but from everybody who interacts with our community, is really the reason why it's been such a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the aspect of community has been, like, the strongest part. Like, we talked about this before, but it was, like, I always kind of read Addicted to Quack, like, even back when it was starting, but I didn't really start, like, partaking in the community until my first year of college, which wasn't at Oregon. I was on the other side of the country, and I found myself, like, missing Duck Sports so much that I ended up being on the site, like, all the time. And it was, like, the easiest way to connect with other Duck fans, because I was at a school where, like, they didn't even care about college football that much. Because we're a bunch of nerds. So that was, like, how I really got ingrained in the Addicted to Quack thing, and I think it's, like, its strongest asset is, like, the community. So all you commenters, you really make this website what it is.
You do. I mean, it's certainly. I never thought I'd be doing this for 9 years when I started it. And
yeah, think of all the other things you could have been doing.
It's really. I mean, I said it on my farewell post. You know, I've put a lot into it, but I've gotten so much more than that from. Just how great the community's been and what the community has given to me. And it's, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet moment for me because, you know, and I put almost a decade of my life into this, and it's been so much fun to see it grow and see it, become what it's become. It's beyond what I ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there just also comes a time in your life where, look, I mean, I have 3 kids. I mean, my oldest kid's 7, and I've had this blog longer than I've had him for, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I've made this work for so many years, but while working and being a father and a husband and coaching multiple high school sports and you know, like I said, doing a lot to kind of make it work. And there just comes a time when I think there are people with, you know, just as much passion and energy and great ideas who maybe don't have to sacrifice so much to make it work. And, you know, It was just time.
Mm-hmm.
It was just time. So.
Well, if Washington wins next year, we know who to blame.
Yeah. So if Washington wins next year, Sean Larson lives in Seattle, Washington, and torches, pitchforks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. We will caravan up to Seattle.
In all seriousness, you know, Sean's going to do a great job.
Oh yeah,
in that role. Look, I'll still have authorship privileges. I'm not going to promise anything on a regular basis, but I'll poke my head through from time to time just to, you know, give you guys some. Everybody's still going to be around. The place is still going to be awesome. The community's still going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I don't expect this to you know, I don't expect there to be anything really massive or earth shattering coming out of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the same awesome place as it's always been. So and that's part of why I feel so comfortable being able to make this. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good times for all.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bit of a bummer that I won't be potting with you anymore.
Yeah, but you're not dead, so.
I'm not dead, no. and for those of you that listen to this show, you're going to find another co-host and continue to sling the quack.
Yeah, so you have to deal with me and somebody else now.
So lucky you. And that's about it. Anything else you want to say for the good of the order, sir?
I've got an outro song queued up.
Uh-oh.
Dedicated to you.
Oh, no. All right. Well, with that said, David Piper, Rusty Ryan, Sling and Quack, and I ain't going to talk to y'all next week.
Nah. Oh, yeah. Joker the Thief, get down with your bat self. It's like we're clapping it out at Autzen right now. Clap it out. Great job, Dave. You killed it. Last 9 years, killed it. All right. See you guys next week. I'm running the show now.
Peace. Yeah.